go back to the spiritual world in course of time. The only thing was that in these stories, what the Vedavyasa Maharishi is telling is this history to us is only for this reason, to understand that lower modes of nature will result in these kind of this will be the reactions to lower modes of nature. That's why Daksha stories was taken. Otherwise, there were so many other Prajapatis. Prior to that, in the third canto, he spoke about Kardava Prajapati. Kardava Prajapati story is full of austerities and penances and mode of goodness. And you could see what happened to Kardava Prajapati. He went back to the spiritual world. But Daksha Prajapati, because of this, he had to accept this punishment from Shiva. That he could not escape from that. But afterwards, Daksha came to his senses after this incident. And then he glorifies Lord Shiva in the Bhagavatam. You can read that. There's so many verses about that. And when they all went back together to Kailas to invite Lord Shiva, Brahma's prayers are there in the Bhagavatam. And these prayers what Brahma has made in the Srimad Bhagavatam is actually the same prayers what appears in the Vedas, what is known as Sri Rudram. Sri Rudram means the prayers to Lord Shiva in the sacrifices, what is recited, that same message Brahma has put it in his words in the Bhagavatam. So therefore also those prayers, also Brahma's prayers to Lord Shiva, which is known as Sri Rudram, is also very popular. In the many, many Vedic sacrifices, Lord Shiva has a very, very significant position. Many sacrifices you will notice there. That therefore there are sacrifices known to Rudram, Maharudram, Adhirudram, Sri Rudram. There are so many names referring and mantras after mantra running to pages and pages glorifying Lord Shiva. And it is that Sri Rudram that has appeared in the Bhagavatam. And because of that, Bhagavatam is also considered not different from the Vedas. Because of this reason, many of the prayers in the Bhagavatam is nothing but Vedas itself, spoken in a different way by the great personalities. The verses are not exactly the same, but the way it is presented or the glorification is done is exactly like in the Vedas, how Shiva is glorified. So that is the result of that, the activities of Daksha, what he had to happen, what has happened.
I just wanted to ask you, before we knew that Sukhi's body was cut into 130 pieces, and that became his religious basis, so where is that story coming from?
I don't know, I've not heard.
It says
that
the body is
turned
into ashes.
Not in the Bhagavatam. I haven't read in the Bhagavatam. I don't know whether it's anything mentioned elsewhere, but not seen in the Bhagavatam like that. Bhagavatam only says that she gave up her body sitting in front of Daksha just to make him realize that she doesn't want to do anything with him. And that was her mood at that time.
I've heard the story also that Daksha, when he was brought back to life, he had a head of a goat.
Yes, because the head was not seen there, so already gone. They took a goat's head and put it on his place, Daksha's head. So he has to take the head of a goat from them.
When was Lord Shiva's consort Daksha's daughter called Sati Devi in first place?
In
she was called Sati.
Yeah.
Is there any reason?
Yeah, Sati was given name to her. Sati actually means that one who is very chaste. And in that way, it was given to her, the name Sati. And she has so many different names. It is her, in later on you find there as Durga Devi. She is worshipped everywhere. And she has so many names, Chandiga, Sharada, Ambiga, like that, Narayani. So many names she has, Vaishnavi, Sharada, all these are her different names where she is worshipped in different places. But what important thing is that she has, you can see how determined she was in her and her potency and strength in making this decision. They were not ordinary people like us that we accept defeat like that. When she was offended and insulted, she decided to give up her body. She doesn't want anything to do with to Daksha anymore, and that determination, and she is glorified in so many places in so many ways, and it's her position is many, many people worship her because of her exalted position in the spiritual hierarchy. She is a very powerful person. Okay, we'll stop there. All glory Srila Prabhupada.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Samsara Sagare Magnam Dinam Mam Karunanidhe Karmam Grahya Grihitangam Mamuddhara Bhavarnaval Srimal Bhagavadakhyoyam Pratyaksha Krishna Mevahi Svigrudo Simayanatha Muktyartham Bhavasagare Manorathe Madhiyoyam Sabhala Sarvada Tvayam Narvigne Neiva Kartavyam Dasoham Tavakeshavam Bhave Bhave Yadha Bhakti Padayor Savajayade Tadha Kurushva Devesha Nadastvanno Yada Prabhom Namasam Kirtanam Yasya Sarva Bhava Pranashanam Pranamo Dukha Shamanam Tam Namami Harim Param Janmadhyasya Yadonvayadidaradas Charteshu Abhijnaswaran Teni Brahma Hrida Yadigavai Mukhyandiyal Surayam Tejo Varimridam Yathavinimayo Yatra Trisargom Rashadham Nasvena Sada Nirasta Guhagam Satyam Param Dhimahi Dharma Prochida Kaida Votra Paramo Normal Saranam Sadam Vedyam Vastavam Atravastu Shivadam Tavatrayo Nulanam Srimal Bhagavade Mahamunikrade Kimma Pare Ishwara Sadyo Hridya Varudya Detra Kridibhi Shushroshubhi Talkshanal Nikamagal Padaror Galidam Phalam Shukamukhadamurdadrava Samyudam Pipada Bhagavadam Rasamalayam Muhurahorasika Bhuvi Bhaugaha Sachidanandarubaya Vishwalpatyadihedave Tavatraya Vinashaya Shri Krishnaya Vayam Numa Yam pravrajandam anubedam apetakrityam dvaipayano virahakataram ajuhava putredi tanmayadayattaravobhinedu tam sarvabhudahridayam munim anadosmi yasvanubhavam akhilashrutisaramegam adhyatmadibam adititirshadam tamondham Samsarinam Karunayaha Purana Guhyam Tam Vyasasunam Upayami Guram Muninam Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudirayel Kamaniya Kishora Mukthamurte Kalavenu Konidadridananendoho Mama Vaji Vichambhada Murare Madhurinna Kanikabi Kabi Kabi Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhudale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devim Gauravani Pracharine Narvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyatya Deshadarine Srimal Guru Charanaravindabhyam Nama Vande Nandam Rajastrinam Padarenum Abhishnasha Yasam Harigadot Gidam Punadi Bhuvanatrayam Shri Gobi Charanaravindaparamanave Nama Pidambaram Karavirajita Chakrashanga Kaumodagi Sarasijam Karuna Samudram Radha Sahayam Adi Sundaramandaha Samvadalesha Manisham Hridibhavayami Om Shri Krishnaya Namah. last Sunday we were reading from the fourth canto the story of Daksha Prajapati and Sati Devi and Lord Shiva. So in the fourth canto in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the chapter, first chapter, is the story of the Manvantaradhipati. Manvantaradhipati means those who are in charge of the different Manvantaras. In the Lord Brahma's one day, there are 14 Manus appear in one day. And they have 71, what is known as Chaturyuga. Kritam Trayada Dwaparam Kali. These four Yugas constitutes one Chaturyuga. So 71 of these Chaturyugas is administered by one of the Manus. And similarly, 14 Manus, so 14 times 71, it is 994 Chaturyugas. And 1000 Chaturyugas make a day of Lord Brahma. Similarly, after the 1000 Chaturyugas are over, Brahma goes back into sleep for one night, which is another 1000 Chaturyugas. And when again, after that, when the day starts, Brahma wakes up and starts his creation process again. It's a very, very long period of time. So those personalities who are in charge of the administration during the time of these different Manus, and the Manus, their descendants, that is what is explained in the first chapter. So basically, the first chapter is giving us a lot of information, those who are interested in the history, or those who want to know how this time is calculated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and how the different different Manus appear in for a certain period of time, and where these different Manus descended from. These details are in the first chapter of the fourth canto. But as soon as you move into the second chapter, you find the story of Daksha Prajapati, because this story was spoken for one specific reason at that time. As you all know, that we are now talking about Vidura and Maitreya Rishi's discussions in Haridwar. That is where this topic is discussed, in Haridwar, where Vidura has come back after his long period of pilgrimage, and he has come back and met Maitreya Rishi there on instructions from Uddhava. And that is the background where where Maitreya Rishi was instructing Vidura in Haridwar. But circumstantially, there is also another reason when this story was spoken by Maitreya Rishi to Vidura, because this incidence of Daksha Prajapati, Lord Shiva, Sati Devi, and this whole incident happened in Haridwar as well. So this is why it's so important. If you go to Haridwar, you can still see there where this Dakshayagam took place, or Daksha's sacrifice happened. So because of that, Vidura was much more interested to know, although this has happened in the Swayambhuva Manu's time, Uddhava, who had the precise information about this incident, what happened between Daksha and Lord Shiva, spoke about this to Maitreya Rishi. And from Maitreya Rishi, Vidura heard about this in Haridwar, and that is how it is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Apart from that, this is also another opportunity in Srimad Bhagavatam to glorify Lord Shiva. There is not so many instances, there are basically three or four instances when Lord Shiva's position as the greatest devotee of Krishna is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is one of those instances where Lord Shiva is glorified, because after all, Lord Shiva is an expansion of Krishna in this material world. Krishna has expanded into many, many forms. For example, to maintain this material world, the function of this material world in a proper way, Krishna has took three different forms: Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. So this is the three forms of Krishna who has manifested in this material world for the smooth administration of this planet. So when it is so, naturally, we have sometimes in this understanding that Lord Shiva is something separate, because we are Vaishnavas, we have nothing to do with Lord Shiva. Or similarly, Shaivites also think that we are Shaivites, we have nothing to do with Krishna and Krishna's devotees. This false understanding comes in. And to avoid that, Srimad Bhagavatam Vedavyasa Maharshi presented this story to understand what is Lord Shiva's position. And by knowing that, a devotee like Daksha, who have misunderstood the position of Lord Shiva and who tried to offend Lord Shiva, and from there what happened with the result of that is all that in the first few chapters in the fourth canto. That is what we find there. The Shaiva and Vaishnava concept, this has been also going on for quite a long time, and often this has resulted in great disasters also. Somebody claiming that Shiva is the Supreme Personality, somebody saying Vishnu is the Supreme Personality, and then arguing about it and fighting each other and making it not able to. So this is coming from this false understanding of the relationship with Lord Shiva as well as the Supreme Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. He has accepted these three different forms to maintain the functioning of this material world. He has accepted three different forms, Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. Now, because they are in they are influencing the three modes of material nature, like Vishnu is in the Satugunam, Shiva is in the Tamogunam, and Brahma is in the Rajogunam, in charge of these three gunas, or the three modes of nature. Sometimes we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam there is so many instances to explain these things. There are so many incidents quoted by Vedavyasa Maharshi to understand that for ordinary people who are infected by the lower modes of nature, they should worship the personality of Godhead Krishna. That is the only way to come out of these lower modes of nature. Otherwise, what will happen? If you worship the other deities mentioned there as like Lord Shiva or Durga or anybody, if you are affected by the lower modes of nature, the lower modes of nature will not allow you, or in other words, it will end up in serious disaster. And this is what his story is mentioned in the 10th canto of story of Rugasura. Rugasura story, when we come to that, we will talk about it in detail. But basically to say that those who are in the lower modes of nature, particularly infected by the modes of passion and ignorance, for them, they should only worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And by doing that, they will be slowly elevated, because Krishna, in the form of Vishnu, is present in the material world as in charge of the mode of goodness. And that goodness will develop in their heart, and in course of time, due to the influence of the mode of goodness, they will also develop the right devotion in their heart for the Supreme Lord. So otherwise it's very difficult, because the Vrigasura story is a classical example to show that if you worship, Vrigasura asked to say, Narada Muni, whom should I worship? Who is the best person to worship? Narada Muni answered him, seeing his mood, who is going to give you the faster result, or who is going to offer me what I want straight away? Narada Muni told Vrigasura that you worship Lord Shiva. And the result was that because of his mentality behind it, the mentality of Vrigasura was such that eventually Lord Shiva took him all the way to Vaikuntha. And although he reached Vaikuntha, he had to leave his body there and come back to this material world again as a demoniac, in a demoniac species. So that is what is Bhagavatam teaching us, that unless one is situated in the very, very high modes of goodness, if you worship any other deities, it will always cause difficulties in life. So just to show that, side by side of this story of Vrigasura in the 10th canto, there is also another story mentioned immediately after that, and that is the story of another great devotee, Arjuna. There also it's interesting, because what is actually history means? History means nothing but it is the samskar or a culture of a person. For example, if you talk about any history of any nation or any country or any society or anything, you are talking actually about the culture of that people, the culture of the particular country or the people who were the leaders of that. Just like if you talk about the World War, it is nothing but it is the story of Hitler. Hitler's story is the Second World War. So if you make the story of Hitler, is nothing but his Second World War, how it came up to that and how the war happened and all this history is coming from that. Similarly, what is Daksha's story? Daksha's story is Daksha's culture or Daksha's samskar. That is what is Daksha's story is. So similarly, if you look there carefully, you will notice that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, while discussing these two topics of who should worship, whom should you worship, this discussion, Vedavyasa Maharshi kept it in the 10th canto in such a way that two incidents of Prakasura worshipping Lord Shiva and Arjuna worshipping Lord Shiva also mentioned there. Arjuna had a tremendous faith in Lord Shiva. In fact, it is from Mahadeva or from Lord Shiva. Arjuna received his Pashupatam, the great weapon which he used in the battle of Kurukshetra. And Arjuna also had a lot of protection from Lord Shiva. He was a devotee. But because Arjuna was in the mood of goodness, and because he was so cultured in his nature, samskar was so high, that even after worshipping Lord Shiva, nothing happened to him. That Shiva gave him all the intelligence and all the right understanding that he could actually develop the Krishna consciousness, purity of, or the Krishna consciousness developed in him in the right direction. So this is only to show that when we worship the other deities apart from the Supreme Lord, the chances are that we could be influenced by those worships, and sometimes material desires can destroy us in that process and drive us away from the spiritual life. So those who are in the lower modes of nature, they should worship only the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated, who is known as the in charge of the Satugunam in the form of Vishnu. And that Vishnu method of worship, process of worship, will help that person to free himself from the lower modes. So that is where, in this particular instance, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we get an opportunity to glorify Lord Shiva at this instance. So first thing, this incident has happened in Haridwar. Secondly, this is the incident when one gets an opportunity to glorify Shiva. So because of the false pride, what has developed due to his karmaganda service or to the practice of karmaganda, Daksha has developed this tendency to not understand the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or the great devotees of the Lord, like Lord Shiva. And the result was that he developed this terrible enmity towards Lord Shiva. And you heard about that story last week we discussed. So before we go further, I would just like to read those chapters, because there is totally 6 chapters describing the activities of Daksha. And when we go through that, we will little bit talk about it also. As we discussed in the first chapter, in the 4th canto, Vidura and Maitreya are discussing, and now Vidura is inquiring about the why this incident happened between Sati Devi and Daksha and Lord Shiva. Why this enmity built up between Daksha and Lord Shiva? Shri Vidura Vajam. भवे शीलवनाम श्रेष्ठे दक्षो दुहिद्रुवल्सला विद्वेषमगरोल कस्माल अनादृत्यात्मजाम सदीम कस्तम चराचरगुरुम निर्वैरम शांतविग्रहम आत्मारामम कथम द्वेष्टि जगदो देवदम महल एतदाख्याहिमे ब्रह्मन् जामादुशुशुरस्य जा विद्वेषस्तु यद प्राणाम सत्यदे दुस्यजान सदीम. So there we find that Vidura is asking Maitreya Rishi, how did this enmity come up like this? After all, who is Lord Shiva? Lord Shiva is kastam chara chara guryam nirvairam shandavigraham. Then he has no enmity towards anybody else. He is free from enmity. He doesn't consider anyone as his enemy. And he is always situated in transcendental position. And he is also the spiritual master of the great sages. Kastam charajana guryam nurvairam shandavigraham alpa aramam kadam dveshti jagado devadam devadam hel edadakhyahime brahman jamadu shushurasya ja vidveshastu yada pranam satyade dusyajan sadi. Then how did the dear daughter of Daksha, how he come get developed this uneasy relationship between his daughter and Daksha, and how this enmity between Daksha and Jamada and Shushura, the father-in-law and the son-in-law, how did that happen? Shri Maitreya Vajam Pura Vishwasrajam Satre Sabheda Paramarshaya Tada Amaragana Sarve Sanuga Munayognaya Tatra praveshtam rishayo drishtvar kamivaryo jisha vrajamanam vidimiram kurvandam tanmahalsara udadishtam sadasyase sudishne bhyasaha sahagnaya hrade virinjam sharvamcha talbhasakshipta jedasa sadasaspadivir dakshu bhagavan sadudalkrada ajam logagurim matva mishasa tatadajyam prangnishanam radam drishtvanam shatyadadadrada Vajavamam jakshubhyam abhivishadhaniva Shuyanam brahmarshayo me sahadeva sahagnaya Sadhunam pruvado vartam Ajnanam najamal saral Ayamdu logavananam yashognu nirabhatrava Sadbhirajarida panthayena sabdhena dushidaha Eshame shishyanam rapto yenme duhidra grahil Panim vipragni mukada savitriya ivasadhuval Grihitvam mrigasha bhakshya panim markadalojana Pratyutthana bhivadarhe vajapyagradanojidam Luptakriyayam shujaye manine bhinna sedave Anichannapyadam balam shudraye vashadim giram Preda vaseshu ghoreshu Predeer bhudaganeer vrida Adatyunmattavan magno yuptakesho hasan rudan Chidabasmakradasnanam predasang astibhushana Shivabadesho ashivo mato matajanapriyam Padi Pramadamudanam Tamo Matralmagalpanam Tasmal Unmadanadhaya Nashta Shauja Yadurkhade Tadatta Gadavaya Sadhvi Chodide Parameshtini. So, in these verses, when Maitreya Rishi spoke to Vidura, that basically what has happened is that Datta has started speaking in a very insulting manner about Lord Shiva's position. And explain that the habits of Lord Shiva, that chida abasmagradasnanam pedasrang sasti bhushanaha, they're always wearing the ashes from the cemetery, and also he was wearing a garland of the bones. Shivobadesho ashivo mato matajanapriya padi pramadabhudanam tamo matratmagalpanam. So this insult begins there, and Maitreya Rishi was talking to Vidura about this, and Maitreya Vaja Vinindivam Sagirisham Apradivam Avastidam Daksho Dhabu Vaspresya Buddha Shattam Prajakrami Ayam Dudevayajanam Indro Vendra Adivir Bhava Sahabhagam Malipadam Devir Devaganathama Nishithyamanasa Sadasya Mukhei Daksho Giritraya Visrajya Shavam Tasma Dinishkram Vivardhamanyam Jagama Kauravyanijam Nigedanam Vidyaya Shabam Girishanuha Grani Nandi Ishwaro Roshakashaya Dushidam Dakshaya Sabam Visasarjadarunam Ye Chanyamodam Tadavachudam Dijaha Eden Martimurdisha Bhagavatya Padi Druhi Druhyatyatya Pradha Krishti Satudo Vimukho Bhavel Griheshu Kudadharmeshu Satto Gramya Sukhechaya Karmadandram Vidanude Vedavada Vipannadhi Buddhya parabhidainyam vistradalpagadi pashu stri kama so stridaram daksho vastamukho jiral vidhya buddhira vidyayam karmamayyam asau jada samsarandi hoye chamu anusharvama maninam girashrudaya pushpinyam madugandhena bhurina madhra chon madhidalpanam samukhyandharadvushaha sarvabakshad vijavutte tadavidhya tapo vradaha itadehendriya rama yachagam jarandviha tasevam nadadashapam shutva dujagulayavai Brihu Pratisraja Chabam Brahmadandam Duratayam Bhava Pradadara Yejam Yeja Yejadan Samanu Bradaha Pagandinaste Bhavandu Sacha Straparibandhinaha Nashta Shauja Mutadiyo Jada Basmasti Dharina Vishandu Shivadi Chayam Yatravaivam Surasavam Brahma Jabrahmanam Shaiva Yajuyam Barinindhada Sedum Dudaranam Bumsamada Pagandam Ashridaha Yesha Yavahiloganam Shiva Pantha Sanadana Yam Bhuvi Janusandasturial Pramanam Janardanam Tal Brahma Paramam Shuddham Sadam Varmasanadanam Vigarhe Adapakandam Devam O Yatravodaral Maitreya Vajam Tasevam Madadashavam Bhagavasa Bhagavan Bhava Nishakramada Kinjal Jumanam Ivasanuga Devi Vishusajasatram Sahasra Parival Saran Samvidhaya Maheshwasa Yatre Jagrishabho Harim Aplutya avabradam yatra ganga yamanaya anvida virejena alpana sarve sum sum dhamayustada. Iti Srimad Bhagavate Mahapurane chaturtha skande Dakshashavo Nama, Didiyodhyaya, Sarvatra Govinda Nama Sangeevtanam Govinda Govinda. So, in this second chapter, briefly, Daksha's enmity towards Lord Shiva is explained. And immediately when the enmity has built up, Daksha started cursing Shiva. And Shiva in turn, Shiva did not say anything, but at the same time Shiva's associates, the Bodhaganas, particularly Nandigeshwar and others, cursed Daksha also. And that is the result that when Daksha was brought back to life again by Lord Shiva's mercy, immediately you could see that he was cursed by Nandigeshwar that he will have a face of a goat. So he had to, when his head was taken out, it was replaced with a goat's head. And Daksha had to live like that for a long time. Another, later on, you will see in the Bhagavadam, Daksha takes birth again when he had, Daksha Prajapati was a very powerful person, that he had to continue the process of creation. And in that process, there he had 60 daughters who were born. And he also created further and further, Daksha Bahulashram and Shabalashwas, they are mentioned there in the Bhagavadam. And when they were created, Daksha was showing the same propensity, and Srinarayana Maharshi were sending them back to the spiritual world by his spiritual instructions. So this Daksha comes back later again in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So why is it that this question comes, that this enmity towards Daksha and Shiva, why this enmity is so harmful? It's not that Lord Shiva, although he is the expansion of Krishna in this material world, apart from that, there are many, many other things to realize from this. That is, generally in this world, there are three categories of people. That is, one is known as friends, the other one is the enemies, and the third one is who is known as indifferent. In the Shastram it is referred to as Shatru, Mitram and Udasinam. Shatru, Mitram, Udasinam. So three different kinds of people. So Shatru Shatru is the enemy, Mitram is the friend, and Udasinam is those people who are indifferent to us. You know, generally, you can categorize most of our relationship with this world falls into these three categories. Some people are our close friends, some people are our enemies, and somebody whom you don't like it or they don't like you or something or the other, some uneasiness develops and probably some enmity builds up from that. So, as you can see that this mentality of this friend and enemy even goes into very, very among the top leaders. They also develop the same nature. Either you are with us or you are against us, as they say. So where does this come from? This comes from this, that I have somebody is my friend, somebody is my enemy. And there is a third class of people who are not even considered to be neither friend nor enemy because they don't have much of an influence on us in any way. Just like we know them casually in this world, and the relationship is also so casual that we don't have much of a close relationship. We don't think about them too much. Or we don't ignore them either. But at the same time, the relationship is very much limited. But these three categories, Shatru, Mitra, Udasinam, these three categories are the three categories of people whom we have to work with in this world. So out of these three, the Udasinam or the indifferent class of people are not harmful because they don't have any impact on you in your dealings or in your life. But the other two, Srimad Bhagavatam says, that the other two, friends and the enemies, they could cause a lot of problems in life. Not in this life itself, even in the next life. Suppose if you know that who your friends were or enemies were from the last life, can you imagine what would be our mind working on? So he was my enemy in my last life. So this life I got the right opportunity to fight against him or to act against him. So for Krishna's grace, we have this thing called forgetfulness. So due to forgetfulness, we are able to forget all these relationships from the past life. That is Krishna's special mercy to us. Now in this life also, when one develops this friendship and enmity, how that will cause problem for us is the story in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Throughout, this incidents will happen again and again and again. It comes back. And Bhagavatam is always trying to teach certain things through the examples of various personalities, devotees as well as demons, that how if one gets implicated in this world through friendship and enmity, how that problem will eventually not only destroy this life, but even that will destroy in the lives thereafter. To prove that, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are so many incidences explained in detail. Because normally, at the even after everything, after all our material activities, one day we are going to leave this world. We have to leave this world. Whether we want it or not, we have to leave. That is the material laws of nature will force us to leave. So, at the time of leaving this world, that majority of the people, they die in a particular consciousness, whatever we have cultivated during our lifetime. That is what will drive us at that time into the next body. Because what Krishna is very clear about it in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Yam yam vabismaran bhavam tejatyande kalevaram tam tam evaidikaundeya sadat adbhava bhavidaha. So the next body is very much dependent on the type of consciousness at the time when we leave this world, what kind of consciousness we have created in us. That consciousness will have a tremendous influence on the next body. So the time when leaving this world, the body what we develop at that time is dependent on the consciousness we cultivate in this lifetime. It is very easy to understand that. That according to our consciousness, what we have cultivated throughout our life, those thoughts will start coming back to us at the time of leaving this world. There was once a great devotee who have spoken about Krishna and Srimad Bhagavatam for many, many years and has helped a lot of people in spiritual life. He has done a lot of service to the people by preaching Srimad Bhagavatam in a way that it appealed to the people. And he did this so sincerely for many 40-50 years in his lifetime. Although householder, he had to get married, but at the same time, it did not disturb him so much to such an extent that he was able to preach Srimad Bhagavatam to many, many people. And they were eventually affected by his effort. And the result was at the end that he said to Krishna one day that when I had all my health and I was in a very nice condition in my life, I tried to glorify you as much as I am allowed to do or my capacity allows me to do. So that was his prayer to Krishna, that I did what best I could. Similarly, you can say about any other service also, that in your lifetime, you may get an opportunity to serve Krishna. There is no guarantee that you will get an opportunity always, because it can happen that it is not always possible that we don't have the good fortune of serving Krishna at any time. So a devotee has always recognized this fact, that serving Krishna, an opportunity to serve Krishna, may not happen in lifetime very often. It comes rarely. So when one gets that opportunity, one has to consider that is a good fortune Krishna has given to him or given to her in whatever way he has been able to serve Krishna. So because although we may think that we will serve Krishna, majority of cases in life what happens is it is kept up to the old age. When everything is over, I have so many responsibility, family responsibility, responsibility towards so many other commitments in life. All these commitments will take us away from serving Krishna, somehow or the other. And because of this, it says there that how the lifetime runs away so quickly that before you can think about serving Krishna, your life is over. Then the time is finished. Balastaval kreda sataha, tarunastaval taruni sataha. That is how life is. That in the child, when there is no knowledge, completely in ignorance, We are mostly interested in playing and enjoying the life in this world. Balastaval kreda sattaha, tarunastaval taruni sattaha. When one is young, then he is looking for association with the opposite sex. So that is the nature. And because influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance, still when there is no spiritual realization, spiritual understanding of life, that is what happens to one's life. Vruddhastaval chinda sattaha. Then after, when the old age comes, what the next thing that happens is that when he gets old, if he has lived a life of sense gratification and simply maintenance in the family and looking after the family, what will happen is at the time in the old age, all these thoughts of young age and the childhood will come back. And it will not allow you, even if you want to engage your mind and senses, because they already become so weak that they cannot engage them in spiritual life. So that is old age. Old age means nothing. But what is the symptom of old age? Once a question was asked, what is the symptom of old age? Old age does not mean that just hair getting white or hair turning grey. That is not the symptom of old age. Old age can happen any time in life. Old age doesn't have to be necessarily that your hair has to go grey. That's not only the symptom of old age. Old age's symptom is that vruddhastaval chinda sakta. The old age symptom is, what shall I do now? This question keeps coming back into the mind. Everything is going wrong in the world. Family, so-called family one has served, has deserted, or they have relationship has got turned into sour relationship. And relationship with the external world also is not working very well. People don't want to see you anymore because you've gone old. And who wants to talk to the old person? Everybody thinks, oh, he's looking so old already. So why waste time talking to him? That's how the old age is. So this old age is not very much welcome by anybody. Nobody wants to become old age. But old age is there. You can't avoid it. And this so-called youth is not going to last very long. It's only a short period of time in life. So while serving Krishna also, all these factors are important. If one keeps too much into the old age, you may not get that opportunity. And even if you want to do that, at that time health and the senses or the mind may not allow you to do that. Vruddhastaval chinda saktaha pare brahmani kobina saktam. But as far as those who are interested in spiritual life, is very, very few who are interested actually in understanding the spiritual side of life. They are very, very few. So when that is the case, this devotee said to Krishna that after speaking from Srimad Bhagavatam for so many years and giving that pleasure of hearing about Krishna and talking about Krishna to many, many devotees, he was able to inspire many people in the Srimad Bhagavatam, through Srimad Bhagavatam. So this personality said to Krishna that in my lifetime, when my youth was there, I have tried to glorify you as best as I could to my capacity. And when I have glorified, my hope was that at the time of leaving this body, that my heart is always looking forward to you for my shelter, as my shelter. Because at the time of leaving this world, we have no guarantee what will be our condition. That is also a fact of life. That no matter today you are running around happily thinking that I'll do this, I'll do that, I got this managed business, that business, so many business in this world to perform. But one day a sudden stop will be put to all this business and business will come to an end. And at that time of leaving this world, you are on your own. There is nobody to be with us, to give us any shelter. And that shelter is, Srimad Bhagavatam says, ashrayam nirodho muktirashrayah. That ashrayam or shelter is Krishna. There is nobody else who can give you shelter at that moment. You may have the best friends in this world. You may have the best relations in this world. You may have a lot of wealth in your hand. But in spite of all that, none of those things can actually help you at that moment. The only person who can help, one who has studied Srimad Bhagavatam, will realize that the only person who can help you at that moment is Krishna and Krishna alone. Nobody else. So that is why this devotee said to Krishna that my desire, I have glorified this only with the hope that in that last minute when I have to leave this body, you will shelter me or you will save me from my from my whatever I'm going to be in my next life. So this way the devotee prayed to Krishna. So when he was praying like this, so many thoughts went through his mind. And he also realized that I have done so much what I could. I have done in my capacity what I could do, I have done. Similarly, all the devotees also think the same thing, that I have spent my time in whatever services one could offer for Krishna, I have done that. But suppose at the time of death, Krishna has forgotten all that, then what happens? So that is another question, because you may have done something, you may have done your best, what you could in your life. If Krishna forgets all that, what will happen to us? Everybody should think that, because in our estimation, we may have done so many things for Krishna. With false ego inside, we may have acted in many times, thinking that it is all fulfilling my false ego. So I am doing something for Krishna, let the whole world recognize this. With this understanding also, people are serving Krishna. But sometimes the understanding may not be right, and because of the lower modes of consciousness or nature, whatever has affected him, his service may not have been very, very pure for Krishna. This can also happen. In that condition, having served Krishna like that, in the impure state of mind, it is possible that Krishna may not remember us. Krishna may forget us at that time. And what will happen to me? This is what the devotee has to ask that question. And when that desire, when that thought comes in, obviously, if a devotee has served Krishna wholeheartedly and sincerely in his lifetime, he will immediately remember that there is only one thing that is still left behind to hold on to. So the question comes, what is that is left behind still? You have done everything you can from your side, as much as you knew what you could do for serving Krishna. And you have followed all the principles and you have chanted the holy name. You have done everything you could, but still, at the time of death, if Krishna doesn't recognize that service, what you have done for Krishna, then you are in trouble. Every one of us are in trouble. So this whole lifetime, what we are preparing for is basically, is to face that final challenge in life. That is, what is at the time of death. So this time of death is the most critical thing in life. It is not varnashrama dharma that is most critical. Whether to make a decision now, here, right now, and checking with everybody, am I a Brahmana or a Shudra? What is it going to help at the time of death? You may be a highly elevated Brahmana, but if Krishna is not there with you, all your so-called Brahmana is all totally useless. It's not going to help you. So it is the same thing, that it is not varnashrama dharma that will help you at the time of death. What helps one person is his consciousness. That is, if he has served Krishna wholeheartedly without the ego of serving the Supreme Lord with his own personal interest, if he has served him, that service to Krishna, that's what helps. But even after doing all that, if at the time of death, if Krishna wasn't there, what do we do? Therefore it is said, he prayed to Krishna, karunye varidhe, karunye varidhe, karunye varidhe, karunyabdhe. There is only one thing that is left behind, that is Krishna's karunyam. Karunyam means Krishna's mercy. So Krishna's mercy is the only thing what a devotee can hold on to. Then if a devotee is thinking that by my service Krishna may be pleased, may not be pleased, who knows that whether you have pleased Krishna or not. You may be thinking, or I am thinking, that I am pleasing Krishna, but is Krishna pleased with my service? This is the question we have to ask. But Krishna has something which is separate from all these things, that is known as Krishna's mercy. So holding on to that mercy, holding on to desiring for that mercy from Krishna, is the thing what a devotee will eventually look forward to. That if a little mercy Krishna shows, all these things can change, all this future life can change. But before that thoughts to come in Krishna's heart at that time, at the time of us leaving this world, is the most important thing. How will that mercy will come from Krishna? That today, with all effort what one has put into in serving Krishna, still if the devotee has to pray to Krishna all the time, that unless that mercy comes from you at the last minute, when the crisis happens, when in the Bhagavatam it is explained very nicely how at the time of death different functions in the body, different functions starts stopping one after the other, and the mucus starts building up in the throat, kandam kurakurayade, and that sound inside the throat, when the doctors put the thing in, try to take out all the mucus from inside so that you can properly breathe. That's the intention behind it. But what can the doctors do? They'll still tell you that he is thinking, the person is thinking. But he will help you for a few minutes so that he thinks that you will be pleased with his little service, what the doctors are doing for you. But none of these things ultimately, when the soul has to leave the body, it has to go. And while leaving, the soul is in a different consciousness. It is in a state of consciousness which will determine his next life. So if one has spent all the lifetime in developing friendship and enmity in this world, Bhagavatam says that at a time of death, all these friends and enemies will manifest in front of you. That is the story in the Bhagavatam. And there is so many examples in the Bhagavatam to illustrate this point. This is the most dangerous thing. And to show that, in the fourth canto itself, in the fifth canto itself, there is a story of Jadabharata. Jadabharata's story is like this. That Jadabharata's story, as most of you know, that Jadabharata has to, he was a great emperor, Bharata, Emperor Bharata, whom under whose name Bharatavarsha came to, secured that name. Bharatavarsha's name came from this Emperor Bharata. So this Bharat, who was the eldest son of Maharaj Rishabhadev, this Bharat has to accept the body of a deer, just because at the time of death his thoughts were gone wrong. In spite of the fact that he practiced so many things in his life, just because and he came to this forest only with the intention of one thing, to practice austerities and penances and to prepare for the next life. That was the goal of coming to the forest of Bharat. Bharata Maharaj, as he was called in the Bhagavatam. So he came with that goal to the forest. And what happened? Look at him, what happened to him? He fell victimized by the thing called love. On the one hand, sometimes you get victimized by enmity, sometimes you get victimized by the love. So these two things, friends and enemies, if one does not keep them away from one's life, they can cause serious problems at the time of death. This is the Bhagavatam says to us. Bhagavatam is teaching us this again and again, that he developed attachment to this deer. Developed attachment to this deer very strongly. When the attachment became too strong, generally at the time of death, Bhagavatam explains how the consciousness changes. That's a very interesting thing, how the consciousness changes. It is in different places in the Bhagavatam explained in a little different way. But essentially what it is that Uddhava asked Krishna also about it. I know what is birth means. Birth we have seen, explained in the third canto we have heard. And we also know a little bit about birth because we are seeing it also. How birth happens and what happens immediately after birth and all these things. But after death what happens? We do not know actually. We hear from the Shastra, this is what happens to the soul when it leaves the body, things like that. So when Uddhava asked Krishna, what happens after death? Krishna smiled at Uddhava, because why you are asking me that question? Krishna asked Uddhava. Uddhava said to Krishna, that all of us in this world know a lot about birth. But death we have no idea, because once you leave, you don't come back. You don't know where you are going. You don't know what happens after that. As far as you are concerned, you have neither birth nor death. You are beyond them, these things. So, at least please tell us about that. That was Uddhava's request to Krishna. Krishna said to Uddhava at that time, Mrityor Atyanda Vispradi. That is how Krishna puts it. Death is nothing but a complete forgetfulness of your identity. Generally, what happens is, when you are at the time of death, as we said before, all the friendship and enmity you have created in this world, depending on their strength, it will start slowly coming back in their personal form. Say you have a lot of enmity towards somebody and you have a lot of friendship also with somebody. At the time of leaving this world, in front of you, all these different personalities will manifest. Their thoughts will get stronger and stronger and stronger. This will happen. So, when just before, a few moments before death, the mind will become, you start thinking yourself, you will start seeing that, am I not that same person? Your thoughts will come like this in your own consciousness. That the one whom you have loved so much, or the one you have hated so much in this world, your mind will start going to them very strongly. Not only it goes strong to them, at some point in time, you will not be able to retract from that thought again, back to your original understanding who you are. For example, if I thought I am Dhinadhyatma, at the time of death, today I have the memory that I am so and so. I work here, I go to this place, I live here, he so and so is my wife, so and so is my children. Like this, I have certain concepts in my mind, some strong conception in my head which is strongly put in there by my life in this world. But these concepts doesn't have to stay there forever. It can always change. It doesn't have to stay. That is what happens at the time of death. This is exactly what happens at the death. I'll give you an example. How forgetfulness and memory changes one's life. When you are, say for example, at home, you're preparing yourself to go somewhere. You want to catch a train or a plane or something. And you know that you're going to get late to travel. The flight is at, say, 10 o'clock in the morning. And to get to Heathrow takes about 45 minutes or half an hour or so. And at home you are thinking, oh, I should leave at least by 9:15. And then suddenly the thought came to your mind, oh, there's a traffic could be very heavy. So if I don't leave a little earlier, I could get stuck up in the traffic. Maybe I'll not be able to catch the flight. So if this thought comes in, that thought becomes so strong that you forget to take your passport or ticket in that process. It can happen. Not that it has always happened, but people who are sometimes due to pressure of time or due to stresses, sometimes this can happen, that you got into the car and you started driving to Heathrow. So while driving, suddenly you realized after a while that you have forgotten your passport or ticket or whatever, something like that. So why did this happen? Because at that point in time, particular point in time, when your thoughts became so strong about missing the flight, you've forgotten the ticket. This is what has happened. So at some time, one thought becomes so strong that you will forget something else. Because that is the nature of the mind. When the mind has become too absorbed in something, it will forget something else. So this kind of things can happen. So similarly, at the time of death also, this is nothing, this is exactly what happens. That the person, when he is leaving the body, he is seeing all these different friends and enemies he has created. Now, out of these two, who is more dangerous? That is also important, because the nature of the human mind is that if you have somebody as a friend, you will remember him. But somebody is an enemy, you will forget him. That is something very, very powerful in our nature. Somebody just has to show you a black face once, that's enough. Then you will keep that in your head all the time. Oh, he acted like that to me. But friends, we have a tendency to forget easily. That is our nature. That's just that our mind is like that. That's nothing we can do about it. So out of these two things, friends and enemies, the chances are that you will forget your friends easily, but you will never forget your enemies. Enemies you will always remember. You will never be able to forget them. And even if your body is in an awkward shape and still it's giving through all troubles, still that enmity, what has gone in, will not go away easily. That is human nature. And that will go on till the time of leaving this body. So at the time of death, what can happen is, at some point, this thought will come back to you about whom you have loved or whom you have hated so much in your life. They will come start manifesting in front of you in their personal forms. And suddenly you start thinking about them so strongly, and at some point in time, these thoughts will get so strong inside, you will start thinking that am I not that same person? Exactly what happened to Bharat Maharaj. For Bharat, if you see the 4th, 5th canto and read through, you will see there. Bharat Maharaj started looking after this deer very nicely, very attracted by its beauty, and started thinking, oh, if I don't look after this deer, who will look after this deer? I mean, somebody will, a tiger or a lion will eat it away. Has Krishna not empowered me or entrusted this job to me to look after this deer? This is how the whole thing started. And it built up in such a way, at some point, when he grew up, who will feed the milk? He has come to the forest to perform austerities and penances, leaving the whole world and to go back to spiritual world. But what has happened now to Bharat Maharaj? He has now become a really good householder in the forest. This is what has happened. There is a nice story about a sannyasi in this connection. One person took sannyas and went to the forest. After going to the forest, he started finding it difficult. He was not ready for it. He was in a rush to take sannyas and go into that ashram and establish himself, how I renounced I am. I have no attachment in this world. I am completely free from all desires. I am so advanced and attached to Krishna. Now I can, I'm okay. I can manage myself. All these desires came to him, thoughts came to him. He went to the forest. After going to the forest, after some time, he was hanging up his kaupin, what he was wearing. He was very austere. He had only very little clothing left behind, because he has given up everything. You see, he had so much renunciation in him. He had only one chadar and 2 kaupins, and the very minimum for maintaining the body, because of the austerities and penance is required. He was doing this in the forest. So one day he hung up all his clothes and the kaupin on a line after washing them up. By chance, a rat came and bit that and torn into pieces. So when that was torn into pieces, he thought in his mind, it's not a bad idea if I get a cat here. Maybe the cat can help, because if the cats are there, normally mice and rats won't turn up there. So they are frightened of the cats. So he decided to get a cat somehow to help him, to free himself from this trouble of the rats. So he went to the village and got a cat from there and brought him. He brought it into the forest. He kept the cat for a while. But he started thinking, cats normally like to drink milk, isn't it? So if I don't get some milk, this cat is not going to stay here. He will go around looking for his own happiness. But if I give him some milk every day, it's not a bad thing that I have to provide some milk for the cat. But if you have to give milk to the cat, what do you need? You need a cow, isn't it? So he decided that maybe I should get a cow. So he went back to the village again and brought a cow from the village to get some milk. He also thought that if I have some milk, I can also have some milk. I could also give some milk to the cat. So like this, we could have a comfortable life here. So sannyasi's mood is changing slowly. So sannyasi brings this cat from the cow from the village. And after he brought the cow and the calf, it became a little botheration, because when he was at home, his wife used to milk the cow. So now he has to do this milking the cow, cleaning up everything, and offering the milk to the cat, all these kind of things. So he was thinking that this is not a very pleasant situation, so why shouldn't I bring her back again here from home? So he went back home and told his wife that, I brought this cow there, but I know I'm a sannyasi and all that, but it's a bit difficult in the forest. Maybe you can, come and milk the cow for me and help me a little bit with that. So she will come, and she came to the forest and tried to prepare some food also. So naturally, when she comes, she also starts preparing food. That's automatically happens. So he starts eating the food what she has cooked then. So eventually, the person who has started his sannyasa ashram ended up in the householder ashram again. So this is how it is, that this attachment and in the life, that one may try to artificially develop these things, it is not going to help. Artificially, you can't do any of these things. These things have to come by in the natural way. when a natural way doesn't come, then by any amount of artificial imposition of these things in life will only cause more and more trouble in one's own life as well as in the society. So here what happened was that we were talking about this time of death. So in the time of death also, in the same way, when the thoughts have gone, thinking about the enemy whom you have thought about very seriously, you are thinking about him, that at one point your thoughts have gone so strong that you start thinking, am I not the same person as my enemy is? Just like Bharat Maharaj was thinking, he was seeing that deer. Bharat Maharaj's house, sannyasa ashram, was getting destroyed, like the way we talked about the sannyasi. He started seeing in this deer his happiness in household and life. After all, it's such a nice animal, an innocent animal, nobody to look after. Is it my duty to look after that deer? He started thinking like that. But time didn't wait for anybody. At some point in time, Bharat Maharaj had to leave his body. So at the time of leaving the body, he started seeing this deer in front of him, the beautiful eyes of the deer, all that spots on the body of the deer, and the way it used to jump and run around, and the pleasure it gave to Bharat Maharaj. All these thoughts came back to Bharat Maharaj again and again. So what happened was, immediately these thoughts came up, Bharat Maharaj up to one point thought, I am Emperor Bharat, who has taken sannyas, came to this forest to perform austerities and penances. But at one point in time, he started thinking, am I not the same deer whom I was looking after? This thought has become to his head, come to his mind. And at some point in time, he was not able to retract from that thought and come back to the position as Bharat Maharaj. In other words, he absorbed himself so much into the beauty of that animal, beauty of that deer, he started thinking, where is the difference between me? I'm the same deer. He started, at that time, he started thinking like that. When that thought became powerful, and his thought as Bharat Maharaj became weaker, he had to leave that body and take the body of the deer. This is that story tells us. So this is how death is. At the time of death, this is exactly, precisely what happens. That you will not be able to come back from your thought, that your original identity. Today you have the concept that I am so and so, I am the family man, I have my wife, children, I belong to this place, I live here, I go there, I go do these things. So many different thoughts are in our head. At the time of death, all these thoughts will leave you one after the other. And at some point in time, whatever the most powerful thought is controlling you, you will identify with that personality or with that entity, and your thoughts will move in that direction. Exactly like Bharat Maharaj's story. This is why that story is explaining to us that the time of death is so critical in one's life, that if one does not think about it, it is in the modern life, it is very easy to forget these things because our life is so busy that you don't get time to think any of these things. And you also think that, oh, death will come, whatever time it has to come, it will come. Why should I worry about it? That is not the Vedic way of life. Vedic way of life is to think all the time that there is an end to this life in this world. And also to prepare this life for that is the purpose of our living here. And how one should prepare oneself into the best condition for the time of death. So in this case also what happened was, at some point in time, Bharat Maharaj could not come back from that thought that he was that deer. He started thinking, and at one point he started thinking that I am that same deer, from which he could not come back to the thought again that he was Bharat Maharaj. So this is what has happened. From this you can see that whomever you have loved or whomever you have hated too much in your life, they will cause problems for you at the time of you leaving this world. This is why Srimad Bhagavatam says, Krishna says repeatedly, again and again, Parasvabhava karmani na prashamsaye na garhayel. Ekadasha skandam, if you read, you will notice there. Krishna says to Uddhava, Parasvabhava karmani na prashamsaye na garhayel. You do not have to admire or glorify somebody's nature, or you don't have to condemn him either. That is ignorance to do that. Parasvabhava karmani na prashamsel na garhayel. You don't have to do prashamsa or you don't have to do garhane. Garhane means to condemn somebody, because
the modes of nature is working in that person in a particular way. And it is the modes of nature that is making that person to act one way or the other. So keeping this in mind, that the Dakshas story is telling us that you develop enmity towards anybody in this material world, at the time of death it can cause problems. Fortunately, in the Dakshas case, situation was a little bit rectified before that thing happened. Daksha created so much enmity towards Lord Shiva. Can you imagine hating somebody like the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Some people are like that. They can hate Krishna also. They are capable of doing that. That they have developed some sort of enmity towards Krishna. Shishubala, Dandavakta, they were all belong to that category. They were able to hate Krishna so much. But our problem is, we neither love, we don't hate either. And we have nothing. We have no attachment to Krishna. Nor we are able to hate Krishna also. In that sort of situation, we keep on moving from one body to another. But whatever it may be, the lesson is, from the Dakshas story, we have to remember that this situation can happen and this situation can develop in one's life. And Bhagavadam is teaching us much more in detail. These stories will come later in the 9th canto and as well also in the end of 11th canto. Krishna discusses these things with Uddhava much more in depth when we will discuss this later. But today, from this one chapter, what I have to say is this, that the Dakshas story is also pointing out to this one fact, that to love and hate in this world, in the way that Dakshas has done towards Lord Shiva, the result was that he had to lose his head and he had to accept the head of a goat. And how much Dakshas suffered, and while glorifying Lord Shiva afterwards, how Daksha mentioned these things in his prayers, we can see now. We'll read the Bhagavatam from that.
Maitreya vacham sada vidyushato revam kalo vaidremanayo jama adushishadasya bismaha nadijakame ta yadha abhishito dakshastu brahmana parameshtina prajavadinam sarvesham adivatye smayo bhaval ఇష్ట్వా సవాజవైన బ్రహ్మిష్టాన విభూయజ బృహస్పతి సవం నామ సమారేభీకృతమం తస్మిన్ బ్రహ్మర్షయ సర్వే దేవర్షి పితృదేవదాః ఆసన్ కృతస్వస్తేన సస్తాల్ పత్న్యశ్చ సభర్తృజాః తదుపశ్రుత్యనవసి ఖేజరాణాం ప్రజల్పదాం సతీ దాక్షాయణీ దేవీ పితృయజ్ఞమహోత్సవం వ్రజంతీ సర్వదోదిశ్యాం ఉపదేవవర స్త్రియ విమానయాన సప్రేష్టా నిష్కగంధీ సువాససాం దృష్ట్వా సునిలయాభ్యాసే లోలాక్షీయ మృష్టకుండల పదిం భూతపదిం దేవం ఔత్సుక్యాద్ అభ్యభాషద.
దర్ ఇస్ సంథింగ్ మోర్ హియర్ ఇన్ ది భాగవతం. యూ విల్ నోటిస్ దట్ ఇన్ ది స్టోరీ ఆఫ్ దక్ష సతీదేవి హ్యాడ్ టు గివ్ అప్ హర్ బాడీ. వి సో లాస్ట్ వీక్ వర్ టాకింగ్ సేయింగ్ దట్ హౌ సతీదేవి డిసైడెడ్ టు గివ్ అప్ హర్ బాడీ జస్ట్ బికాస్ సతీదేవి డి నాట్ వాంట్ టు హ్యావ్ ఎనీథింగ్ టు డూ విత్ దక్ష. Because she was frightened that at some point she may be addressed by Lord Shiva as Dakshayani. So she decided, I don't want to have any relationship. In fact, if Saridevi wanted to destroy Daksha, it was not difficult. Who is Saridevi? Saridevi is Sri Parvati. It is her who is, gopis went to her, Kartyayini Mahamai, Mahayogini, Adishwari, Nanda Gopasudam Devi, Padime Kurude Nama. So all the great some devotees have gone to her for help when they wanted Krishna. It is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that story in two occasions you can see that gopis prayed to Kartyayini, that Sri Parvati, that when they wanted Krishna, they prayed to her. And Krishna told her, at the time of appearance itself, Krishna told Yogamaya that when you go into this material world, where she is known as Mahamaya, that you have a responsibility. You should appear in the womb of Yashoda Devi. You will be transferred into Devaki's womb, and I will be moving in there from Devaki's womb. So all this was arranged. And at that time, Krishna gave this benediction to her that she will be worshipped by different Sharade, Tyambike, Sharada, Ambika, Chamundi, so many names. Where she will be at Narayani, Ishani, like that. So many names she will be worshipped in this world later on. So that's how she has come. She is Mahamaya. And gopis have prayed to her when they wanted to have, they performed the Kartyayini Vratam. It says in the 10th canto, 41 days they performed this Kartyayini Vratam. So from this, From this we can see that even gopis approached her when they wanted her help. She offered help to them. That she went up and spoke to Krishna that these young girls are praying to me like this. What should I do? Krishna said to her, then now leave that, hand it over to me. I'll look after from now on. And that is how from subsequent events happens there in Krishna's stealing the clothes from the gopis, and then later on the promise Krishna gave to them about the rasa dance, and all this comes later. So you can see the gopis worshipped her. Later on, Rukmini Devi worshipped her also. You can see in the 10th canto later on, Rukmini's marriage day, she was visiting this temple where Lord Shiva and Parvati Devi were worshipped. So she worshipped Parvati Devi. Namasye Twambige Vishnam Susandhanayudam Shivam. That Rukmini Devi is praying to her. Namasye Twambige Vishnam. That she prays to her that I would need your help now because Susandhanayudam Shivam, along with your children, Kartikeya and Ganesh, you should bless me so that I may get married to Krishna. So this was her prayers to Lord Shiva and to Sri Parvati. So Sri Parvati is a powerful personality who can grant one devotee's desires also as far as surrendering to Krishna is concerned. So she did that, and because of that, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is also mentions about her powerful position. She is known as Shakti, or the energy. And that energy, she is also capable that Daksha was nothing for her if she wanted to destroy Daksha. But on the other hand, she chose it in such a way that she does not want to have relationship with a person like Daksha, and she decided to give up her body then and there. And then she performed penances and took the birth as the daughter of Himalayas, or Hemavati, as she is called